Blog Talk Radio.
Something for the holiday. After all, it is the last show of the 2019 year. Get something in that glass. Fill it up. Whether it's a cup of Earl Grey or an espresso, or you're joining me with a little brandy. Welcome, brother. Mine. Brethren, you'll know what I'm talking about here without me saying the words, because there are some things that, not so much secrecy, artificial intelligence is probing it all, creating the illusion. Nothing about me as a Freemason, or I implore, nothing about you is based on illusion. We live in the real world. Real dynamics, real differences of opinion, facts, fiction, absurdities, and questions. Just when one is answered, we find to our delight that it opens the door to another. And when we walk around with that newfound knowledge, it gives us a different perspective. It's like we want to plateau, but we never quite get there. It's always that moving, that dynamic. You think of it, if we could just see the molecular energy going on, you know, it's constant. Maybe that's what the designers of Freemasonry were really talking about, those fundamental truths. Oh, the myths are fine for some, especially for children, I guess. And if your mind is troubled, you need something comforting and simplistic to linger over. But there's also that sense of proofing. Our energy doesn't dissipate. You know that sense of immortality? Well, is it such a metaphor to think, is it so dystonic to think that the energy within me never dies? Energy doesn't have that death concept. It dissipates, reconnected. Odd that we face a period where existential crisis is real, and it's difficult for us to move 7 billion people. We would have to have a common threat, and there would have to be some urgency to it. Well, that will happen when there's famine. Sadly, we can predict, but it doesn't really give us any bragging rights. We don't have any satisfaction knowing what the science projects. It's frightening. But we've always lived with this, whether we've acknowledged it or not, since the beginning of time. This potential was there, always there. Just we didn't see it. Could we have done more? Well, I think we're still in that process, and I think that's a question that's still in front of us, not behind us. What are we doing to become more enlightened, to inform ourselves, to deal with malcontents and the Flat Earth Society? There are people troubled enough and assured enough to feel paranoid or suspicious or anxious, and be sure that what we see on the popular media is vulnerable to manipulation. And yes, it is. Just like forever, you and I hopefully make decisions based on the facts. Conscience? If my conscience is skewered by the values that I've been taught, that would mean that we're going to remain a tribe 7.3 billion of us divided. Where then do we find this, do we discover this process of ethics and morality? It's like mathematics that is applicable to the universe around. How is that? How is that? We're not predominant. We didn't create the, what, somewhere between 200 billion and 3 trillion galaxies. And to think, we do we have that conceit? Is that really what we need to validate this strangeness? We calculate the physics based on the math with proof, or what we call proof today. And our machines are probing back in time. And our greatest thinkers are at work. I don't want to say the words, so you inject them for yourselves, brethren. Waxing philosophic. Brushing up against Arthurian legend, historic truth was fluid for many writers. To the extent we took all for truth, until the humor was on us. An organization of such gravitas could not live on fabrication. And in that period, a reexamination of earlier work began the authentic progress of a brotherhood, unlike anything else. Today, in Upper Canada and other similar states, hesitance has distracted us from the inspired work that was being built. Affirmation and validation. A body of self-evident truths was constructed with metaphor that has withstood the harsh winds of cynicism and been a muted rally cry for insightful minds. If not for the prejudice shown to Irishmen in London, the ancients might never have galvanized Irish and Scottish in a repudiation of the Premier Grand Lodge. The influence reached across the Atlantic, unstopped by elitist distinctions, because the cultural makeup of the Celt was firm and old battles were remembered. Today, in a secular environment, we've compromised the uniqueness of Freemasonry. Serious scholarship was pushed to the periphery. The caliber of an applicant became unimportant. Contemplation was pushed aside by those who distorted discovery into a feeble attempt to tell a man how and what to think. An initiatory body of work was compromised from within, and still, even hobbled. It has held enough appeal that millions have been drawn in. We simply quantified quality. It required definiteness. When faux masonry was described, we did not hear the warning. Even today, moralizing is substituted for morality, begging the question, when we reached the point of listening to, have we reached the point of listening to ourselves? Together we are strong and better than we are individually. Individually, we make discoveries that satisfy the mind. Sharing that process, respecting the apprentice needs to make his own discovery, is sharing. Freemasonry is a pilgrimage of discovery forever. Thank you. Baker and on the trumpet, and Paul Desmond on sax on the album Together. Sort of fitting, I thought. Yeah, given the comments that we're making today. Poetry time. Poetry time. I like to think of it as the poetry corner, but yeah. Perhaps fitting. I may use that. Period of renewal, you could get to do those kind of things, huh? just a taste. Not too much. Don't let this go to your head. I often think about the nature of a man living in a busy life, with aware of the demands on his time and thinking ahead and organizing in his mind how best to make use of his time and accomplish most of the, or all of the chores that he has given for himself task for the day. And at times, we lose track that the tools that we have are there to give us a control, not to add to the confusion. It's almost with embarrassment. I remember a very thoughtful man that I knew, a good friend, told me that good management wasn't the person running around frantic. It was the person that was able to sit down in there in a morning with a routine, a time to read, to think, and know that with confidence that the procedures needed to perform the task were all in place. That he had been able to create a self-perpetuating, that perpetual motion machinery. Busy work is what the tradesman called it. Never let the foreman see you sitting. Always have something on the go. Always. And then they would teach you what those simple pickups were. And you know the manager or the boss that you've had that likes nothing better than to see you doing something without asking why. Just as long as the doing is enough. Senseless? Yeah. Pointless? Uh-huh. Yeah. So if that fellow is sitting down with us, how is he not looking at his watch, saying, Graham, hurry up. I have things to do, places to go. It's the deciding element is about a question. Depends what you want, what he wants. Easier to dismiss yourself. I know. I can't do that. I won't do that. I don't like that. Easier. That's common, commonplace. Than to say, what's the difference if I wanted to create my own poetry, if I wanted to be an artist and create a painting, what would I need to do? I want to be a musician. It requires the question, why? And a series of questions. Are you sure? If you want it, you know it's there in front of you. It's possible. Do you know that? What's the difference between you and the person you most admire doing that task? Focus. A yearning, convincing, he's convinced that it's something that he wants to do. You're convinced it's something that you have to do because somebody else. Never going to work, is it? Let's talk to the real you for just a moment. The real you is where the mastery of focus is important and possible. If you take that road, if you make that choice, you follow along with the amount of time necessary, just enough to achieve the goal that you have in mind. Your level of achievement aims low, does it? Just get me through the day. That's all I need. Really? That's what you think of yourself? Hmm. Truly? Where did that come from? And what of the potential? Oh, an immediate argument. Or defensiveness. Oh, no need to posture. We're being honest with ourselves here. All of the things that are important to us deserve our attention and deserve the most valuable thing that we have, time. Don't be shrill at me. Look inside yourself. Do you have that feeling of completion? Satisfaction? Good then. If you don't, there are ways. Do you take the child to the end of the pier and toss them in to teach them to swim? You call that tough love? Huh. Is that what somebody did to you? Must be all right then if you didn't die. Or do you ease into it? Gradual. Do you practice to demonstrate that you can organize your time to make some things priorities for you? I remember when my friend Terry showed us his brand new cello and he began taking lessons. And then Terry is a cellist in a symphony. But he loved the music and the music that he shared. Good wine, good conversation. Music was like nothing I'd ever heard before. And his music, a little bit better today than yesterday, until it was just sublime. He was playing music for the soul. In your field, in your area, your pilgrimage, you can do this. You can break it down if you need to do that. Or you can look in the mirror and ask yourself if it's time to give yourself unrestricted effort. Not conceited, not with arrogance. Because we know that's what that is. Not competitive, because we know what that is. No. Achievement is something else. There's a quiet solitude about achievement. You just know. You sit down and listen to Yo-Yo Ma. You just know. Why is he happy? Because he brings happiness into the room. Doesn't brag about it. The nouveau riche always have to display their wealth, don't they? Old money doesn't. Old money's comfortable. Old money is recycled clothes and using the bar of soap that was used by your guests after they've gone. No. Nouveau riche, the new money, has in their mind that how they need to demonstrate as if that's defining for them. And for some of them, sadly, that's it, I guess. They're defined by money. Money based on exploitation. Feel good about yourself. You know where I'm coming from. If a poet describes a lion, he does not describe him as a naturalist would, nor even as a traveler would, who was intent upon stating the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. He describes him by imagery, that is, by suggesting the most striking likenesses and contrasts which might occur to a mind contemplating the lion in a state of awe, wonder, or terror, which the spectacle naturally excites, or is, on the occasion, supposed to excite. Now, this is describing the lion professedly, but the state of excitement of the spectator, really. The lion may be described falsely or with exaggeration, and the poetry be all the better. But if the human emotion be not painted with scrupulous truth, the poetry is bad poetry. It is not poetry at all, but a failure. I'm going to share that in mind. Let's see how close to the truth this work becomes. This is from his play Love's Labor's Lost, which ends with a perfect song for a merry party on a frigid evening. Shakespeare occupies a position unique in world literature. Other poets such as Homer and Dante and novelists like Leo Tolstoy and Charles Dickens have transcended national barriers, but no writer's living reputation could compare to that of William Shakespeare, whose plays written in the late 16th and early 17th centuries are a small repertory theater, are now performed and read more often and in more countries than ever before. The prophecy of his great contemporary, the poet and dramatist Ben Jonson, that Shakespeare was not of an age, but for all time, has been fulfilled. It may be audacious even to attempt a definition of his greatness, but it's not so difficult to describe the gifts that enabled him to create imaginative visions of pathos and mirth that, whether read or witnessed in the theater, fill the mind and linger there. He is a writer of great intellectual rapidity, perceptiveness, and poetic power. Other writers have had these qualities, but with Shakespeare, the keenness of mind was applied not to abstruse or remote subjects, but to human beings and their complete range of emotions and conflicts. Other writers have applied their keenness of mind in this way, but Shakespeare is astonishingly clever with words and images, so that his mental energy, when applied to intelligible human situations, finds full and memorable expression, convincing and imaginatively stimulating. And if that were not enough, the art form into which his creative energies went was not remote and bookish, but involved the vivid stage impersonation of human beings commanding sympathy and inviting vicarious participation. And thus, Shakespeare's merits can survive translation into other languages and into cultures remote from the Elizabethan English. Here is a piece from Love's Labor Lost. Oh, you all remember that. The King of Navarre and his three lords, Berwyn, Logaville, and Domain, swear an oath to scholarship, which includes fasting and avoiding contact with women for 3 years. They receive a letter from Don Armado, a Spaniard visiting King's Court, telling them that he has caught Costar, a fool, and Jaconeta, a country wench, consorting in the park. The king announces Costard's sentence, and he and the lords go off to begin their oath. Don Amado confesses to Moth, his page, that he has fallen in love with Jaconeta. He writes her a letter that he asks Costard to deliver. Meanwhile, the princess of France has arrived to visit the king. Because of his oath, however, the king cannot receive the princess and her party at his court. he and his lords must visit them at their camp outside the castle. The three lords fall in love with the three ladies, as does the king with the princess. Brohm gives Kostard a letter to deliver to Rosalind, but Kostard accidentally switches it with the letter from Don Armado to Jaquenetta. When he gives Brohm's letter to Jaquenetta, she brings it to the learned Holofernes and Sir Nathanael to read for her. They tell her that the letter was meant for someone else and to deliver it to the king. And this is how it ends. It's a little song. When icicles hang by the wall, and Dick the shepherd blows his nail, and Tom bears logs into the hall, and milk comes frozen home in pail, when blood is nipped and always beef foul, then nightly sings the starry owl, to wit, to who, a merry note, while greasy Joan doth keel the pot. When all aloud the wind doth blow, and coughing drowns the parson's saw, and birds sit brooding in the snow, and Marion's nose looks red and raw, when roasted crabs hiss in the bowl, then nightly sings the staring owl, to wit, to who, a merry note, while greasy Joan doth keel the pot. Feel the impressions, eh? Not bad. Here, little Zaz. A gift from France.
Of your mistress, of all the legs I got, and all of her.
Let's go.
It's one of my favorite performers, full of energy, and she loves jazz. That's Zazz, with her, accompanied by Claudio Capeo. Just fabulous, I think. And a Merry Christmas gift to all. Feeling it? I hope you are. I hope you experience yourself on a symbolic level. Even though you don't walk around the streets talking about it or pointing it out. When we present ourselves in the adornment of our Freemasonry, we epitomize a symbol, something different than what we are. It's like the meaning of the words that Shakespeare puts together, more than just the meaning of each word individually. There, as we heard, impression of emotion and unrestricting the event connects us with the fear or excitement or contemplation of it each moment. We become a symbol. I remember a dear old friend, a boy, when we were boys. Freddie was his name. And he came back from a trip to England, and we were talking. We were always, you know, when you're boys, you have more opinions, and you don't need facts to base them on. Just full of opinions. Freddie's goal then, as I remember, and I almost laughed out loud, except I caught myself. His goal was his purpose. He was going to go on to university. Good for you, Freddie. And he was going to become wise, so he said. Well, I can be, as I've reached this long age, and I can look back on it, I can be generous about what Freddie was saying. And at the time, I just thought it was a bit outlandish. One doesn't talk about being wise. You either are or you're not. To talk about it is like some of those questions that gentlemen don't ever ask. We exercise some good taste, not the unrestricted, the lack of filters of the shop floor, where you just say whatever comes into mind. No. This is where we're taught to conduct ourselves with a sense of grace. Not blunt force, because we can think that way. It's unpleasant. We don't do it because it's unpleasant. Yeah. Just about rounding off this book, this material by Cryer. Colin Dyer, fabulous material. And it's not the end by any means, but rather than throwing education out there to see what sticks against the wall, people like me notice patterns. And once we have patterns, we can organize them. And you can decide, make decisions. So, not to say that you've already convinced yourself that you're incapable. This is the freeing your mind to put what you're hearing into context. Why not? Why not attempt to be audacious? Why not attempt to probe your mind, your capability? Because you are probably underestimating yourself. And you and I know it. Not our capacity for stupidity, that, nope. But life is serious. Our happiness that we're bound to share isn't about giggles and foolishness and a locker room joke. No. It's that aha, that smile that happens when with discovery. If you've ever been around people, men and women, that are busy with discovery, with science, you learn very quickly that it's not about predicting success. It's about learning it and observing, leaning into the detail. What do you learn? Every piece of information has something to convey if you're aware enough and attentive enough. And then you take the next step. You don't repeat the same mistake, if you want to call it that, twice. You move on. Today, you can equip yourself with very powerful computers that help accelerate and expand your observation. And so, new detail is pouring out around us. Oh, don't be so ridiculous to think that it's overwhelming. It is not. It's always been what it is. It's always been there for us to put to use when we have a need. So unlike any programs that are going to tell you that you must be aware, no, you need to be head in sand, be head in sand. If you think you have to crawl to the top of Machu Picchu and sit cross-legged at dawn to understand your nature, I suggest you follow perhaps a more Chinese or more Zen-like approach. Pick up your hoe or whatever tools you need and set yourself to the work and focus all your attention on doing the work very, very well. And the answers that you seek will come to you. Here, Brother Dyer says this: he that trusteth such an one with any possible engagement is free from all trouble and anxiety about the performance of it. Trust him, for his words are the breathings of his very heart. He promised and is faithful to his trust and is an utter stranger to things of a double meaning. And as he endeavoreth at all times to give satisfaction to others, so he is sure, as a reward for his consistency, to be admitted a member in that most amiable society where every individual is perfectly square, perfectly polished, and perfectly upright. I love that. Thank you. thanks for tuning in, everyone. This year has been amazing. The level of support from each of you is affirming. I thank you most sincerely. Best wishes for the new year. If I can patch together something for the New Year's Day, I'll certainly do that. And meanwhile, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness and include yourself in that. You deserve it. I'll be with you again soon.